Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, our first segment of October is fittingly dedicated to all those breast cancer survivors and those who've lost the fight. We'll be chatting with an enthusiastic spokesperson and two-time breast cancer survivor and invite you to participate in one or more of the Connecticut Making Strides Against Breast Cancer walks occurring across the state in October. Then we're going to meet the director of the Connecticut Business Leadership Network, a nonprofit business-to-business organization whose members are committed to bringing diversity full circle by including individuals with disabilities in the workplace. And we'll talk about an ongoing series of workshops being hosted to help connect state businesses to the untapped assets that disabled individuals can bring to their workforce. Then we'll close with another inspiring guest who's affected by lupus and who will explain how the upcoming Walk to End Lupus Now is providing important information and fundraising to support research and outreach services to the thousands of state residents touched by this disease through the Lupus Foundation of America. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Are you looking for a fun and colorful outing this Columbus Day weekend? Well, visit the annual Autumn Arts Festival on the charming Madison, Connecticut town green. It's hosted by the Arts Center Killingworth, and this free Autumn Arts Festival is Saturday and Sunday, October 7th and 8th. Come on down, pick up your event program, and enjoy some of New England's most exciting fine artists and artisans. There'll be live music both days of the festival and a juried exhibition of selected work by the festival artists at Spectrum Gallery and Store. For more information on this art and music-filled Columbus Day weekend event, you can call 860-663-5593 or visit artscenterkillingworth.org. Well, here we are. It's October, and it's only appropriate that we not only start off the month of October with our very first segment being dedicated to breast cancer awareness, but that I'm welcoming a brand new friend from my hometown of Waterbury, who is a dedicated volunteer for the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer initiative here in Connecticut. There's multiple events going on across the state throughout the latter half of October, starting off with a Making Strides event on October 15th in New Haven and Westport, on the 22nd in Bridgeport and Litchfield County, as well as Making Strides walk in New London County. And then on October 29th in Hartford and in Waterbury, where Pam will be among the assistants. She'll be in attendance and be participating, I think. So, Pam, great to meet you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm from Naugatuck. I lived in Waterbury for 35 years.
There you go.
But I'm back in Naugatuck at my childhood home.
We'll let you come back.
And, I'm sorry?
We'll let you come back.
Okay, thanks. And I'm in charge this year of the Survivor Tent at the Waterbury event, so it should be a great day. And it's my fourth stride. So.
Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit about why you're both so passionate about the cause and so willing to get involved to the extent that you are. We talked for a few minutes about your background before we turned on the microphone, but not only a two-time survivor, but we're also going to talk about an interesting side effect that was the subject of a discussion on our program just a week or two ago. So tell us a little bit about the first time you heard those dreaded words that I also have heard, you've got cancer.
It was 1998. I was in my 40s, total routine mammogram. And got those calls saying you need to see a surgeon, and I didn't understand why they were saying that. Fortunately, a dear friend went with me because I I, at that point, couldn't put my hand in front of my face. And she wrote all the good notes. And, yes, I did have cancer. It was DCIS, which was in an early stage. It ended up requiring two lumpectomies, 40 rounds of radiation. I actually burned, so they had to stop the radiation and then, with, you know, start it again. It was before plastic surgery was involved. So for those Italian, it looks like the freak. Mm-hmm. But it also left me with some permanent damage that they, as time has gone on, surgeons have said would not recover from additional surgery. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 14 years, again, another routine mammogram, and I got the dreaded words, we need to do more pictures. This time it was in the other breast, totally different cancer. It was close to the chest wall, which was also near to my heart. It was stage one going into stage two, and with the advent of now plastic surgery being included in breast cancer, I had another lumpectomy and then deconstruction and a plastic surgeon involved. So it was it was difficult. I had four hospitalizations from an infection. I had a PICC line. Mm-hmm. The first time I had to shoot heparin, I shot it across the room. So there are reasons why I never became a nurse. Mm-hmm. But got through it all. And on October 11th, I will celebrate 5 years cancer-free again.
Well, that's fantastic. And as I said, unfortunate but interesting that the very last conversation that we held on this program about cancer with the Griffin Center for Cancer Care down in Derby was with an oncologist who was talking about new technology that helps women kind of visualize their deep breathing so that they can play a role in sort of co-piloting their cancer treatments to ensure that when the dosage is being delivered to the area of the cancer or where the cancer was to the margin tissue, that they would be able to separate their heart the furthest from the area where the potential dosage was going to be administered. And if I understood correctly from our very brief few words before we went on mic this morning, this is something that was not available to you, and as a result, you had some sort of cardiac damage.
I did. I was born with a heart murmur, which has always been followed, but after the second round of radiation treatments, again, 40, so a total of 80. My chest wall was very damaged, so they suggested that surgery was not an option. However, the murmur had gotten to the point that my aortic valve needed to be replaced. So last December, with some nifty doctors at Hartford Hospital, I had what is known as a TAVR surgery, which goes up through the groin, and my aortic heart valve was replaced. No cutting down the center because they said from previous radiation it would never heal, and I was out of the hospital in 3 days. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I've been learning a little bit about that that procedure, and sometimes you're out of the hospital and back to work in 3 days. Mm-hmm. after that. It's quite amazing and very gratifying that you know, you have been so successful to the extent that you have in the rounds of visitation to the surgical suite of the various hospitals that have cared for you. With all those experiences and with 5 years now cancer free and you know, decades since the first diagnosis, you must be a fantastic and very empathetic counsel to many other individuals who may have been introduced to you who are just recently diagnosed or in process of treatment?
Thanks. I am. I'm glad to say. I belong to a great support group called Brave at Heart, which is through the Harold Lever Cancer Center in Waterbury. And I have personally believed that once you're in this club, you owe it to the next person walking through it. It's not easy. We all see parties and walks and relays and things where everybody celebrates it. But they're not showing the people walking in the floors at 3 o'clock in the morning wondering why this happened to me. Mm. And I've made it my point to reach out especially to those going through tough times that just need an encouraging word, a visit, or a meal. It just is who I am. And I believe everybody who goes through this, and it's more and more each day, deserves also to help the next people coming in.
And in the 3 years you've been involved with Making Strides, I've got to believe that you've walked up to or had someone walk up to you, and you've been able to meet them and identify with them and maybe make a difference to those perfect strangers.
Absolutely. While Relay covers all kinds of cancers, Making Strides is specifically towards breast cancer. So everybody who's coming in there, in 99% of the cases, has either known someone or is walking in memory of someone or is someone who has survived breast cancer. So it's kind of there's also male breast cancer, so I can't say it's a total sorority,
right.
But it's a good camaraderie of people that, it's love personified. If you need to get a good shot of, a hug or, just feeling good about yourself and stuff, that's the day to do it. It's a great walk. It shows you're not alone in doing this. Mm-hmm. And the American Cancer Society has gone well enough to provide the tools to create a background which each individual area has their own splash to put on it, but it's great to have an event that personifies what we're trying to, we're trying to keep the mission, which is to get a world without breast cancer.
Right, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the other types of support services and where the funds go when people walk the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer events, starting on October 15th at Lighthouse Point Park in New Haven, and in Westport on October 15th at Sherwood Island State Park. Probably folks in the Southern Connecticut areas would have to flip a coin to decide which location is more gorgeous for an event like this, but we hope
I've walked folks in New Haven. It's gorgeous.
I've been involved at Sherwood Island as well, the beautiful thing about Making Strides Against Breast Cancer here in Connecticut, folks, is that you've got 3 weekends, so you could potentially be involved in all three. And I know that many dedicated folks like Pam Monahan, often consider it and could and do. So with that in mind, the weekend of Sunday, October 22nd, Bridgeport's Seaside Park, another oceanfront location, will be hosting the events, as well as Litchfield County's White Memorial Conservation Center up in the hills of Litchfield County, and then in New London County, I see it Rocky something. I think it's Rocky. Rocky Point Park.
Rocky Hill State Park, I think.
Okay, and then those are all happening on Sunday, October 22nd. And then on Sunday, October 29th, you can go and meet Pam at the Library Park in Waterbury, at the Greater Waterbury Making Strides event. Or if you're in our range of our Hartford and Northern Connecticut stations, maybe on October 29th, head over to the Bushnell Park in Hartford for the Making Strides walk. And if you'd like to find out about any of these, you can go to makingstrideswalk.org and then just pick the area of Connecticut that you live in or put your zip code in, and it will direct you to the closest one, or just consider possibly attending even more than one if the cause is important to you. In the last few minutes that we have with our dedicated volunteer and survivor, Pam Monahan, Pam, if you could please remind folks some of the ways that their proceeds go to improving the lives and supporting not just the individuals diagnosed, but their circle of care.
I sure will, but I also want to give a phone number that folks who are not internet would like to call.
Oh, great.
If they want to. It's 1-800-227-2345. It's 1-800-227-2345. If you'd rather talk to somebody in person about a Strides event, you can call that 800 number.
Okay, we'll give that again at the end, too.
Yeah, some of the things that the American Cancer Society has been able to do is that we've been able to fund more than $64 million in breast cancer research grants and $84 million in grants that apply to all cancers. Mm-hmm. And they're investing in research to uncover strategies for more effective diagnosis, new treatments, new options, who do not respond to or become resistant to existing strategies. That happened with, I can say it on a personal note, that happened to me between first and second treatments. The radiation technology was more, it was more in tune with somebody who was fair-skinned and burnt easily. So they have new ways to help people to get over that, and so they can get successfully treated. They help with the Look Good, Feel Better program, which is terrific, which I've also participated in. And they help to provide rides to treatments, and that is so helpful for somebody who just can't do it themselves. I know that in the last stages of radiation treatment, when you're on weeks 5 and 6, you're pretty tired. And sometimes you just need a ride. You just don't want to, do that. Mm. The other thing is that they also help with chemotherapy, and that it's wonderful that you can depend on somebody who will give you a ride. Those are arranged by the American Cancer Society.
Yeah, and people,
all you have to do is call your local group, and they'll be able to do that for you.
Right, and I was going to say, people who may somehow not be touched or have a loved one who's been touched by breast cancer are still welcome to come to these events. It's a great place to cheer on folks fighting the fight, cheer on and survivors and remember those who have lost the fight. But also to find out about volunteer opportunities. Maybe you're in a situation where you can't afford to write a check, but you could certainly afford an hour or two once a month to maybe provide some rides to someone who needs to go to a treatment. Or maybe you're in a position where you have some expertise you could donate to the Look Good, Feel Better program. There's lots of opportunities to learn about at these Making Strides events. And once again, on October 15th in New Haven and Westport, on the 22nd in Bridgeport, Litchfield County, and New London, and on the 29th in Hartford and Waterbury. You can find out more if you'd like to call 800-227-2345. That's 800-227-2345 to get involved in October 2017 Making Strides here in Connecticut, or get more information about either how you could help or how you or someone you love might be able to benefit from the services offered, or you can go to making It's Making Strides Walk, right, Pam? The website,
yeah.
makingstrideswalk.org, and then just put in your zip code, and it will take you to the closest Making Strides Walk event that's happening, and you can get registered and begin the process to get involved online. Pam Monahan from Naugatuck is going to be working with and is 3 years strong as a supporter of the walk in Greater Waterbury, two-time survivor, and as you can hear from her story, a fantastic advocate and a great person to talk to if you or someone you love has been touched by breast cancer here in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, our first segment of the month of October, appropriately dedicated to you, Pam, and all who are sharing your fight, and to all the folks who we've lost. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Just a quick note, there's activities for families and kids, and it's a fun day for the whole family, so you don't just have to come alone. Great. Bring everybody.
Great. MakingStridesWalk.org is the place to start, folks, or call 800-227-2345. How I have missed the Connecticut Business Leadership Network in casting my net wide across Connecticut for great guests to feature on the award-winning For the People. I do not know, but I am so glad that I have made the acquaintance of Sharon Denson, who's on the program with me this morning. She is executive director of the Connecticut Business Leadership Network, and what has brought me to her is that the network recently held its very first program in a new series entitled Inclusion Works Here, Creating an Inclusive Workplace from Recruiting to Retention. And this is by far not the first series of events that the network has held, but it is the latest and will be ongoing and is important in respect to the fact that our program and folks like Sharon and the folks in the Business Leadership Network work so hard to try to do what they can to break down barriers and stigmas for individuals that may have some sort of a disability that might either hamper or prevent them or discourage them from going out and trying to work when they're completely capable and want so badly to be contributing members of the Connecticut workforce. So Sharon, to you, I offer thanks and congratulations. And tell us a little bit about the network.
Okay, the Connecticut Business Leadership Network has been around since 1994, so we've been around for quite a while, and we are an organization of businesses committed to the hiring of individuals with disabilities. And our mission is to bring inclusion full circle to include people with disabilities in the workforce. We are a business-to-business organization. We do not work directly with job candidates with disabilities, although we do connect our members to organizations that do. And we work with best practices and training for businesses so that they can open up their workforce to individuals with disabilities and create that inclusive workforce.
And I guess if you just sort of glance at the headlines, you'd get the idea that, you know, the Connecticut business landscape is not in the greatest shape. A lot of companies are leaving or are flat in terms of hiring, but I'm told by my other sources that nothing could be further from the truth. There are many, many, many thriving businesses here in Connecticut, many that work with your network, and they are definitely in need of workforce candidates.
Most definitely. What we're looking at right now, and for some reason or other, the news has a tendency to focus on the unhappy things or bad things that are going on, but your sources are correct that there are businesses in Connecticut and they are thriving. And with, I believe at this point, a 4.3% unemployment rate, that's very close to full employment. That is not the picture for people with disabilities, which actually is an advantage, is that in that it makes people with disabilities truly that untapped workforce. And businesses are now starting to recognize that, and we are assisting them in doing that by giving them the tools to understand how to recruit, successfully recruit, hire, and retain individuals with disabilities and take advantage of that talent pool.
Excellent. Well, that being said, let's talk a little bit about some of the ways you know that your members are performing the more unique or specialized types of outreach to help best connect themselves to the workforce pool that you're advocating for.
Well, there are a number of ways that we actually work with our businesses to find that best connection. One of the ways is for career fairs, and we have some coming up in October, which happens to be National Disability Employment Awareness Month. And we have a number of career fairs, that there's going to be one coming up in Waterbury, and we call those the Diversability Career Fairs. And we put those on with our partners at the Connecticut Department of Labor and Rehabilitation Services.
Very good.
So that is, yeah, and we get great turnout for both businesses and for job seekers. And I've heard about hires and many success stories as a result of these career fairs.
So tell us, for folks out there who may have medium to small businesses, maybe a workforce between 5 and 20 people, who started off small and got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger over time, and now they're at the point where they're starting to want to have more diversity in their employee base. Speak to those people about the kinds of resources that the candidates that your network is trying to connect them to can bring to their organization.
There are a variety of resources, as you said, and it depends on the type of job that you're looking to fill. We are connected with colleges and universities, so if you're looking for someone with a degree, who may or may not have a disability, but you're open to someone with a disability, the college and universities are a great place to start if you're looking for someone with a degree. If you're looking for someone to fill another kind of position or a variety of positions, we would connect you with the Department of Rehabilitation Services. And this is a state agency that works with individuals with who were born with or have acquired a disability and want to be in the workforce. So you're getting a great mix when you are working with Department of Vocational Resources of people with a lot of experience who may have acquired a disability or people who are new to entering the workforce.
Very good.
Yeah.
So that being said, in the history of CTBLN, do you have some idea of how many successful candidates you've been able to help launch or establish, a firm or lifelong career with your business members?
When talking to my business members, I do not have statistics, and statistics are very, very hard to get. Partially because until recently, people with disabilities did not disclose. And disclosure of a disability, and that makes it, whether or not one discloses, because some disabilities are hidden, you can't necessarily see them, makes it difficult to really get very, very hard data. But my understanding from speaking with our members is that their initiatives, with our help, have been quite successful. And they have been able to hire people with disabilities and on all levels throughout their businesses.
Well, that's good.
So we're really excited about that. And excited. Every time I hear a success story, I get very excited. It's a wonderful thing to see for everyone.
And do any functions of the network either interact with other partners or directly with job candidates in any respect to provide them with sort of up-to-the-minute counseling or advice on how to launch or venture out into the workforce to find maybe their first job or a permanent job?
We do not do that directly. We do that through our workforce partners. And again, those are the department, through the state, the Department of Rehabilitation Services, and the Department of Labor. So we work both very, very closely also with DDS, the Department of Developmental Services. And so those are three of our major partners, and we work very closely with them so that they understand the types of candidates that businesses are looking for, and so our businesses understand how to source those candidates.
Excellent. Folks, if you're listening, we're speaking with Sharon Denson. She is the executive director of the Connecticut CTBLN, I should say, the Connecticut Business Leadership Network. It's a nonprofit business-to-business organization whose members are committed to bringing diversity full circle by including individuals with disabilities in the workplace. They recently held their first in a series of workshops called Inclusion Works Here, which focused on creating inclusive job descriptions. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk with Sharon a little bit more, focusing not only back on the event that happened earlier in September, but also on what is in store for this series and other activities in the future. And we'll also touch base on some of these statewide job fairs that are going to be occurring starting in Waterbury very shortly. Sharon, stick with us. Folks, stick with us. We'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Patricia Russo, Executive Director of the Women's Campaign School at Yale, will lead a discussion on how women can be involved in local politics at the YWCA Hartford Region's Community Matters Women in Local Politics event coming up on Thursday, October 12th from 5:30 to 7:30 in the Saramundi Room at the YWCA Hartford Region's Administrative Offices. At this free event, Ms. Russo will encourage local Connecticut women to take the first steps toward greater political involvement and give them an opportunity to advocate and advance social justice, equality, and dignity into local policies and laws. YWCA will donate to Women's Campaign School at Yale. Register now at ywcahartford.org. And consider attending an evening of wine and beer tasting to benefit the Friends of the Thomaston Opera House on Friday, October 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Lyceum on Main Street in Terryville. Come enjoy hors d'oeuvres, a silent auction, raffle prizes, and art display by the 10 to 1 artists, along with live music. Proceeds will help pay for the restoration of the historic Thomaston Opera House. Tickets are just $25 per person or $30 at the door, and you can get them by calling 860-283-6250 or visiting landmarkcommunitytheater.org. Well, thanks for sticking with us. We're back with Sharon Denson. She's Executive Director of the Connecticut Business Leadership Network, CTBLN, working hard to help businesses accomplish a goal of making their workforce more diverse. They accomplish their mission through education, peer support, and sharing of best practices. As a professional organization, their members include business executives, diversity and inclusion, supply chain, and human resources professionals. I suppose many of them were in attendance at their September 15th event called Inclusion Works Here. It was the first session in an ongoing series. And I should also say ctbln.com is their website if you'd like to learn more or perhaps be affiliated with this organization if you're not already. So Sharon, thanks for sticking with us. As I said, tell us a little bit about the kind of the conceptual formation of this latest series that you're doing called Inclusion Works Here.
Well, the idea came actually from our members. And we realized in speaking to our members that having a successful disability hiring initiative really depends on a lot on the culture of your organization, because you want those hires to stay there. You want them to be able to have careers and to work their way up the ladder, so to speak, in a larger business, or to have more responsibility if it's in a smaller business. And you can only do that if you have an inclusive culture. And we realize that it starts from the beginning. When you're seeking to hire and recruit individuals with disabilities, or actually this applies to someone from any diverse background, what is it that you need to do, and how do you need to think about crafting a job description that does not filter out some of the best candidates? So that is basically the idea behind our Inclusion Works Here series. We will start with job descriptions. Our next meeting, which will take place in November, will speak to inclusive interviewing techniques. And then we'll be going on to look at the other parts of creating an inclusive culture.
Very good. In the September 15th event, which was hosted by the Walgreens Distribution Center in Windsor, you were speaking to HR professionals and business leaders who are scripting the advertisements that go out to solicit candidates.
Essentially, yes, because that job description really informs the people who apply for a job. When they look at that description, they decide whether or not they have the qualifications, who applies, when they apply, how they're screened, so how all the applicants are screened, mm-hmm. as to whether or not they are, you know, applicants that meet the requirements of the job, and then how that hiring manager rates those applicants and then makes that hiring decision. So it's very, very important. And, you know, the words that you use in that description can make a very big difference.
Hmm. Well, what were a couple of the strongest points that you came away with from this event?
I would say the strongest points were the importance of working with a job description and making sure that description is up to date and it describes the position as it is done today, and includes the essential functions of that job. So that when you're hiring for that job, and, you know, all of this just like flows right through. When you're hiring for that job, you're going to be able to have a candidate who can actually fulfill those functions. It also is about hiring for ability, and not as to whether or not that person looks like you as a hiring manager, or went to your school, or is similar to you, but whether or not they can do the job.
Mm.
So having a great focus on doing that job. And one of the individuals who was at the event, who works for a major insurance company in the Hartford area, reinforced what I spoke to and talked about focusing the hiring managers, when they were looking at candidates, to focus on the abilities of the candidates,
mm-hmm.
More than anything else. We have a tendency to hire, it's human nature, we have a tendency to hire in our own image.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And when we do that, if we are not of a diverse background, we have a tendency to hire people who are not diverse.
Mm. That being said, you know, one of the more contemporary aspects of the human resources process is the heavy use, and I've witnessed people mainstream individuals who are a little bit older or are coming back into the workforce after a period of time being away, who are computer savvy but not really computer savvy, and the prospect of kind of threading all the needles in the online application process is sometimes daunting to them, and it could be difficult. Do you recall if there was any mention whatsoever in the course of at least this first workshop in your series about either making accommodations for individuals who, due to their disability, may not be as savvy or even able to use computer technology that seems to be now the gateway through which most of the workforce must pass in order to actually ever even interact with, be visited by, or talk to a human being?
This is a challenge, and you mentioned it is a challenge. You don't necessarily have to have a disability to find this a challenge. As for people with disabilities, the law requires that people with disabilities who are unable to go through that process have the opportunity to speak with someone from the company who can help them through the process. So often on a website, you will see a phone number, or an email address, or a way of contacting human resources, so that if you cannot, if the website and the website application process is not accessible to you, you are able to be walked through it.
And the law backs that up.
Yes.
Very good. Great. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, Sharon, for folks that may have tuned in late or are getting ready to go into our music programming days or other programming on our stations, could you just remind them about this other component of partnership that you're doing with these job fairs?
Well, one of the things that we are really excited we've done throughout our history has been career fairs. And these are career fairs that are designed to draw in people with disabilities, and we welcome people with disabilities. Our last few career fairs that we have partnered with the Department of Labor and the Department of Rehabilitation Services on have been called the Diversability Career Fairs. We will be holding a number of them in October. The first of these is on October 6th at Naugatuck Community College, and it would be for the Waterbury area. We will also be having one in Middletown, and we will be having one in New Haven. And more will be coming up. We will be announcing more as they come up.
So people can go.
If somebody wants to find out, excuse me?
Oh, I was going to say, people can go to your website then to learn about where and when these are, as well as the upcoming segments of the Inclusion Works Here series?
Yes, they can. And those upcoming segments will be announced shortly. As for the career fairs, to go directly to the site for them, you would go to ctjobfairs.com.
Excellent.
And that will give information for both job seekers and for businesses that would like to sign up to register for one of these career fairs.
Very good. Well, Sharon, it was great to meet you and talk with you and learn more about the Connecticut Business Leadership Network. And now that you're kind of in the loop with us, I look forward to talking with you and your designees regularly to help not only remind Connecticut businesses about the opportunities being part of your network could afford them, but also the opportunities that you bring to many people who might not otherwise have a chance to enter the workforce in Connecticut or improve their status in their job life. The Connecticut Business Leadership Network is a nonprofit business-to-business organization whose members are committed to bringing diversity full circle by including individuals with disabilities in the workplace. You can learn more about them at ctbln.com. Our guest has been Sharon Denson, who is their executive director. Sharon, great to meet you once again, and thanks so much for taking the time this morning. Well, wrapping up our program this morning with invitations and information for another great upcoming event. And I'll tell you, nothing helps make me respond more quickly to an individual wanting to be on the award winning For the People than for them to tell me that they've been a listener of one or more of our radio stations for more than 20 years. So for that, Colleen Han, our guest this morning, gets huge kudos and appreciation from me and all of our stations. Colleen, thanks for joining us this morning. Colleen is here to talk about her experience with lupus and to invite all you listeners, no matter where you are, to come out to the beautiful locale of Calf Pasture Beach in Norwalk on October 14th. 15th, I'm sorry, for this year's Walk to End Lupus. So, Colleen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So, first and foremost, tell us a little bit about yourself and what gives you the passion to spokes for this organization so enthusiastically.
Yep, I've been living in New Canaan, Connecticut since about 1981. And about 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with lupus. And I decided to get more involved with the Lupus Foundation because I found the organization online. And I found that they really were the best organization because they not only did tremendous research, but they also provided a lot of educational programs for families so that to help you understand what lupus is. And I felt I could best be of service to them by working with this organization. And I've been able to raise a lot of funds for this organization over the past years, and I've been participating in walks all over the country.
Oh, that's great. Well, the great thing about the organization that you're supporting is, as you mentioned, it's not just about the contact that the individual who's affected can make, but also the kind of wrapping effect that they provide to the caregivers and family and loved ones to also help them, because their journey, while sometimes very different, is extremely important to the support and process of the individual who's diagnosed.
Correct. Yes, and then they can be, you know, extremely helpful to the family member because they can be there to help them, even if it's just simply listening to what they need. Mm. And if they know what they need, then these programs will provide that information to them to help them better understand what they're going through more easily.
Well, sadly, in Connecticut, we've seen too many people who have lost the fight as a result of lupus, but many others who have had very sustained and high-quality lives due to some of the therapies and research outcomes that have been accomplished to date. Can you talk at all, Colleen, about some of the exciting things that you hear from the medical and scientific front that fire you up?
Absolutely. One thing I'd like to mention is that, you know, unfortunately, over the last 50 years, there's only been one on-label medication approved by the FDA, which is the Federal Drug Administration. But recently, we, as of Monday of this past week, we had a patient-focused drug development down in Washington, D.C., and we were able to bring members of the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies and, most importantly, the patients together, and which was critical to get their perspective to help develop new therapies. And the LFA was a huge leader in bringing this meeting about, which I think is really fantastic. More specifically, in Connecticut, the Lupus Foundation of America has funded over $150,000 in research at Yale to encourage grants for young researchers to pursue a career in lupus research. Mm. So I think that is fantastic in itself. And, you know, the more we talk about it, the more awareness that we raise as individuals, like I try to do, that will also help bring awareness to the different organizations out there and let people know what lupus is really all about and help them give an understanding of what we need to do to help find a cure.
Well, let's facilitate you doing that right now for folks that may be listening to the program or checking in on the podcast after broadcast. What's the elevator spiel for you when people say, well, really, really sorry, I've heard of lupus, but don't really have much of a clue of what it is? And then if you could talk about how it is impacting you right now.
Oh, absolutely. Lupus is known as a cruel mystery because it's extremely difficult to diagnose. For me, for example, I went to many, many, many different doctors, and I only got diagnosed about 7 years ago. However, I think I have had it since childhood. It can affect any organ in the body. People can experience fatigue, joint soreness, kidney involvement, and it can also be, unfortunately, fatal. In women, it affects about 90% of the time, and it affects people of color 2 to 3 more times frequently than Caucasians. So, it's really a different disease for every person who gets diagnosed with it, and that is the thing someone had explained to me, that if you have 5 people in the room who have been diagnosed with lupus, their symptoms are all different. So that has been a challenge to the medical community, I'm sure, and they, are trying to find a way to make it easier so that people can live more normal and healthy lives. I've been given a lot of accommodations at my work, which is fantastic. I use a dictation device. I'm able to speak instead of having to type because I've had a lot of inflammation in my arms. And unfortunately, I've had a lot of surgeries, so I've had to take some time off. So they've been very flexible with me on that. But, as I mentioned, everybody's situation is different, and I know that with this research, we are going to be much more closer to finding a cure than we ever have been. And I think that the LFA is hugely responsible for becoming a great leader in that aspect.
And what I'm hearing is while there are global efforts dedicated to research toward finding a cure, there really is no way for an individual to adapt lifestyle behaviors or prevent it.
Yeah, there really, unfortunately, is no cure. I mean, there are definitely triggers that can affect the disease and how you feel. Like sunlight can be a trigger, so wearing limited sun exposure and wearing protective clothing instead and sunscreen are very important. You might want to speak to your rheumatologist to recommend that you stay active as you're able to and make sure you watch your diet as best as you can. Stress can also be a factor, so try to stay healthy and exercise and try to be active as best as you can. Really, that's the advice that I've been trying to follow, not always very successfully, but I try to follow it to the best of my ability, and I've been okay, so far, but, I have had some challenges along the way, so it does make it a difficult thing to go through.
Yeah. How about heredity? Are the children of individuals who are diagnosed with and suffer from lupus more predisposed to also getting it?
Well, lupus is a heterogeneous disease, meaning that everyone experiences it differently. It's not necessarily a genetic disease. People really should work with their rheumatologist to identify the best treatment plan and health issues that they are experiencing. Be open with your doctor and make sure you tell them everything that you're taking, everything that you're eating, so that they can find the best treatment plan for you.
While, as you pointed out, lupus is highly individualized. 5 people in the same room will have 5 different, completely different stories to tell in all likelihood. What are some of the points of advice you've either learned or your loved ones or caregivers have learned or that are out there as a result of the organization what advice and information do you have to the loved ones and caregivers that share their world with an individual diagnosed with lupus?
I would say just listen to them. Try to find out what their needs are. Ask them how they are doing. I would make sure that you get them as much exercise as you can within limits. Obviously, not everybody can walk with this disease. Find out what their doctor recommends, what they best need, if their doctor is allowed to share that information with you. And really just be there for them as a friend. A lot of times it's really just helpful to have someone to talk to and listen to and share what's going on with them inside.
Great. Well, in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Colleen, put the shout out to all the folks listening across Connecticut and within the sounds of our voices to this upcoming event at Calf Pasture Beach.
Yeah, it's going to be on October 15th at 4 p.m., and we're so excited. We haven't had a walk in Connecticut, I don't think, ever. So this is our first time there for the Lupus Foundation of America, and we hope that you will all join us at 4 p.m. on Sunday, October 15th. And we look forward to seeing you there, and it's going to be a spectacular day.
It's even though it's a little bit later in the day, it's got kind of a celebratory atmosphere. There's ways to learn more about how to support research and meeting folks who, as you pointed out, may have many dozens and dozens of individual stories to learn about ways you might be able to volunteer. So really, not just a fundraising opportunity, but a social and awareness-raising situation as well.
Absolutely, and we're going to have a lot of teams that are participating in the walk. I'm an individual, but there are several teams that are already registered on the website, and you are more than welcome to do that. It's free to register at www.lupus.org, and you will be able to get that information online and just type in the state that you want to go to the walk at.
Mm-hmm. And for individuals that might be listening who may have heard that someone in their circle has recently been diagnosed, or for someone who's unfortunately may learn that they have lupus, what are one or two of the most important things they need to know about interacting with the Lupus Foundation of America?
Really, they're there for you to help you, and just ask. They are more than happy to help and answer any questions that you may have. You can reach out to them on the website. You can call them. They've really been there for me and have provided me with a lot of and very much so much information that I almost have too much information. And they really just they're there to help. So they really will just give you what you need and talk to you and lead you in the right direction if you don't know where to go or to ask something. That's pretty much what they will do for you.
Excellent. The 2017 Walk to End Lupus Now in Connecticut is happening in Norwalk on Sunday, October 15th at Cap Pasture Beach. Check-in is at 3. The walk begins at 4. The route length is just 3 miles. Dogs are not allowed on the beach per policy of the city of Norwalk, so this time you have to leave your pooch at home, but we hope folks will come out and join the many hundreds of people who can participate, even though they've been diagnosed, including Colleen Han, our guest and great spokesperson for the cause this morning for the Lupus Foundation of America, bringing the Walk to End Lupus Now back to Norwalk on the 15th of October. We hope folks will come out. Colleen, great to meet you. Good luck, and we'll hopefully see you there at the walk. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.